My talk is about the two old topics in quantum field theory, the ABJ anomaly and Noether's theorem. And we will try to see if we can say something new about us, these very old topics. So this is a work based on recent papers with Valentin Benedetti, that is a student in Bariloche. He will move to the ICTP later in the year. And Javier Magani, that is here. So let me review then the usual things about the ABJ anomaly. If you have massless fermions coupled to the electromagnetic field, there is a chiral symmetry at the level of the classical Lagrangian that allows you to derive this current, but it's classically conserved, but quantum mechanically, you have to take into account that this is a composite operator, and if you do things properly, you get this equation that is a quantum non-conservation of the current. And this thing is necessary to explain the pion decay in photons, QCD, for example. So it's a physical thing that you have measured already. So there are several derivations in the Lagrangian QFT, Feynman diagrams or non-invariance of the path integral measure. And the question that I want to address in this talk is if this is still a symmetry. And if so, in what sense it is a symmetry? So it is usually considered an anomalous symmetry, whatever it means. That is not a normal symmetry, but it's not explicitly broken, and it's different from spontaneously broken. It has these quite peculiar features. First, suppose we consider this as a continuous symmetry, then it doesn't have another current because the current is not conserved. So this is quite strange. And the second question is that if you consider that it's not a symmetry, still the Goldstone term works. For example, pions are Goldstone bosons corresponding to this symmetry. And the third thing is anomaly quantization. The number here is quantized in integers. So that can you can get from the Atisha single index term or from Wessumino-Witten term in the effective chiral model. And the fourth thing, that the fourth peculiarity, is anomaly matching. The coefficient of the anomaly matches between ultraviolet and infrared calculations. So these are the old stuff. So the idea of the talk will be the following. I will try to show that the ABJ anomaly is an ordinary in the sense that I will define, internal U1 symmetry of the theory. But however, has a peculiar feature that it messes with the Hack duality violations of the theory. That are algebraic things that happen in the theory. And this already clarifies and unifies the origin of the main features in a perspective that is only based on ordinary symmetries without anything else. So the plan of the talk is the following. I will start discussing Hack duality violations, just a brief review of what Javier's talks in last week. And then I will ask how, if you have, on top of this Hack duality violation, you have a symmetry, a global symmetry, how this symmetry can mix it up with these Hack duality violations. And this will lead us to an abstraction of the Noether theorem in its strong form, in the sense of the existence of a current. And then I will classify some simple possibilities where this happens, and we will see that somehow the models that you can, the most simplest model that you can build, have either a non-compact generalized symmetry or non-compact Hack duality violation sectors, and this implies that the theory is free, and this is the main, most of the violations of the Noether theorem come in this form, and then we have also this anomalous ABJ model. And from this abstract perspective, you already get all these features of the anomaly. And then I will show how are the pion and QED realizations of these ideas. And then at last, I will produce a calculation, quotation mark, of the anomaly coefficient from the Witten effect, just using these ideas without any, let's say, Feynman diagram of or path integral quantization. And then I will end up with some conjecture. So then let me review the Javier talk. So if you have a quantum field theory for any region of a space, you can assign an algebra of operators there. We will assume this is a von Neumann algebra of operators. And the first thing that you can think about is what is the meaning of locality in this perspective. And then you have two possibilities, two different meanings of locality. One is additivity, the fact that the algebra of this ball, for example, is produced by smaller algebras. Typically, you have a quantum field, and then you smear. And then if you have a quantum field, you will always get additivity for your algebra when you produce the algebra. And the second meaning is causality, that implies that operators, observables, separate the space-time regions, commute to each other. So this implies, in algebraic terms, this implies this inequality, that the algebra of this region have to be included in the algebra of the outside part commutant. The outside part of a region R, I call R prime. And the prime to an algebra, I call it, is the commutant. All the operators in Hilbert space that commute with all the operators of this A R prime. So this is just saying that the operators at space as spatial separations commute to each other. And then you can ask, in this perspective, you can ask whether this inequality is saturated or not. So with Javier, we proposed that the meaning of a complete theory is just the case where this is saturated for every region. When this is saturated, it is called that there is Hack duality, in this case, particular case, for the additive algebra. So in the case of a complete theory, you will have Hack duality for the additive algebra. But the, in this talk, I want to discuss not the complete case, but what happens with non-complete theories. So in non-complete theories, the maximum, you can say that the A of R prime prime is the maximal algebra that you can assign to the region R, because it's the maximal algebra compatible with causality, in the sense that it will commute with operators outside. And this maximal algebra then, if the theory is not complete, for some region will be the additive algebra plus some other operators that we will call non-local operators. And when this happens, it also happens the same for the complementary region. So you have also the complementary region, the maximal algebra is bigger than the additive algebra. So here you have a picture where you have the additive algebra of a region included in the maximal algebra. And for the complementary region, you have exactly the same with, in principle, different non-local operators. It is useful to think not about these local operators, but the classes of this operator and the action of the additive algebra. These are really the invariant things of the theory. So an important thing is that if Hack duality fails for R, it fails for R prime. So non-local operators always come in dual pairs. You cannot have non-local operators for one region and only local operators for the outside part. And this follows from von Neumann double commutant theorem. Also, these A's and these B's cannot commute all to each other. Otherwise, one of the algebras will be additive. So in that sense, you cannot assign the A's and the B's to the complementary region and say the theory is still causal. You have to make a choice if you want to keep causal algebra, let's say. And the last thing that I want to say is that these features of the theories are usually topological. For example, typically for balls, there is Hack duality. There are no non-local operators for balls, There are some examples, but then they can be cured easily. So, so I will assume that there is there is hack duality for balls or topological balls. And then it's transposability that the non-local operator classes can be smoothly deformed as you deform your region, and it depends really on the topology of the region. You can think you are moving with the stress tensor. You can that is a local operator in your algebras. So the example that I will talk about is about these regions with non-contractible loops. For example, in that case, typically the non-local operators are Wilson loops. But not all Wilson loops will be non-local operators, because if you have a charge for a charge field operator for the representation of the Wilson loop, you can produce these Wilson lines. And with these Wilson lines, you can, in principle, break into pieces the Wilson loop that will be an additive operator. So in general, for example, for non-abelian theories, the adjoint representation is always additive, because you have the charge F mu nu. So in that case, in the non-abelian theories, the non-local classes are labeled by representations of the center of the gauge group, and complementary operators are the tough loops, let's say electric fluxes, that are labeled by the center of the group. I will talk about Maxwell field. So let me review in the case of the Maxwell field. If you have a Maxwell field, you can take fluxes of electric and magnetic flux fields in the two surfaces, and the exponentials of these fluxes are the Toft and Wilson loops, let's say. They are non-local operators. Because of the conservation of electric and magnetic fields, they commute, these fluxes commute with the outside part of the boundary, so they are non-local operators. And for dimensions different from 4, you have a group of the reals for the Wilson loop and a group of the reals for the Toft loops. For dimension 4, the region and the outside part have the same topology, so you can put electric and magnetic fluxes in the same region, so you have an R2 for each of these dual group of non-local operators. The fusion rules are simply abelian, the charge is sum, and the commutation relations are this one for linked loops. In the case of QED, where you have charges, electric charges, then not all Wilson loops will be non-local, because you have the charges that will break your loop. And then the R is broken to a U1. And for the complementary region, the Toft loops will form a discrete set of the integers. This is in dimension different from 4. In dimension 4, you have both things in the same ring. So you have the Wilson loops and the Toft loops all live in the same region, and also in the complementary region. Some few remarks. Non-local operator is a relative notion. So a non-local operator, a Wilson loop that is non-local, is non-local in the ring, but is local in a ball. It can be constructed locally, for example, exponentiating the magnetic flux in a ball. So it's a relative notion with respect to a region where we are talking about, we're thinking the algebra of the region. There are arguments indicating that for pure ring sectors, totally abstract idea, for pure ring sectors, in the sense that there are no two ball classes, the structure of the non-local operators has to be always an abelian group. And the commutation relations are completely fixed, where the dual groups, one is the group, abelian group, and the other one is a group of representations. And you have this commutation relation where this is just the character of the representation. And this was in our paper here, and we are preparing a better mathematical proof of that. In the standard Hep literature, this such is called generalized symmetries. And the usual descriptions do not use this Hack duality violation ideas, but continue just putting the quantum field theory in non-compact topologically non-trivial in compact non-trivial spaces, usually follows an Euclidean description. For us, it's very important to talk about commutativity of operators and the real-time description. So I will not follow this path. So then, let us talk about how a symmetry can interact, can mix it up with the Hack duality violations. So let's assume that we have a global internal symmetry. This is defined here as you have a unitary operator that takes the additive algebra region in itself. Doesn't mean that it doesn't change operators, but takes the algebra and keeps the locality of the algebra, right? This is the usual idea of global symmetry, global internal symmetry. It takes a field operator and just changes the phase or changes it between two, etc., but it doesn't change the locality of the algebras. When you have that, if you take commutants, you get that the maximal algebra is also taken into itself. And then you can ask, what happens with the non-local operators? So the non-local operator classes. Then it can happen that in nothing, they do not move these classes, or it can happen that these classes are moved into themselves, right? The first thing that you can compute is, because the classes are formed in this way with local operators, you can see that the non-local classes that are charged under the group, in the sense that they change as a point-like transformation of the class label. So a whole class will go to a whole class. Say a Wilson loop with some class will go to a Wilson loop with another charge, but they will not be mixings. Then to continue, let us talk about twist of the global symmetry. A twist is just an operator that implements the symmetry inside the region and do nothing outside. So it's like a partial symmetry transformation that only transforms in some region. You need some buffer zone in order to define a unitary operator there, where instead you do not know what the twist do, but it doesn't matter. It's important that these twists can always be constructed using modular theory, assuming the split property that is basically saying that the theory does not have too many degrees of freedom in ultraviolet, that it hasn't got a Hagedorn transition, let's say. If the theory doesn't have Hagedorn transition, then you can always construct these twist operators. And in some sense, these people made it. In some sense, this is a kind of weak form of the Noether theorem, because it allows you to apply the symmetry in a region, the thing that you would do also with exponentiating the integrated current in the region, let's say. So in this sense, it's similar to the Noether theorem, but it doesn't give you a current. And it's also, in some sense, it's also stronger than the Noether theorem, because it also holds for discrete symmetries. But all this is completely proved and is very old. And now we want to understand what happens when this region R has non-local classes. Then you could say that the twist in general, because it doesn't transform the outside part, it will belong to the maximal algebra. But it has to transform as the group, the region inside, so it has to transform in the usual way as the global group does the additive algebra in the region. So, but then you can ask if you can construct twists that are additive, that is, that they are not the max, they do not require non-local operators, but they are purely additive. And also you can ask if the twist is complete, that it does not transform only the additive algebra, but also the maximal algebra in the way the global group does. So these are two concepts that you can ask for in the case where your region have non-trivial classes. And you can in the cases that the classes transform, you can construct examples of both of them using modular theory and also, for example, integrating. Typically, when you have a continuous symmetry and you have a classes, you will get, as in the Abelian anomaly, a current that is still conserved, is not Gaussian invariant. I will come to that. So you integrate this current and you put some boundary terms, and then you can get this type of twist. So this type of twist always can be constructed. But the different question is if you have additive and complete twists at the same time. So a twist that is constructed by local operators and transform the non-local classes in the right way. In that case, it's immediate that the non-local classes cannot be charged because you are transforming with a local operator, so it cannot transform the non-local classes. And then, by assumption, because it's complete, transform the non-local classes in the correct way, it means that the group cannot transform the non-local classes. So we could prove the converse of this, that if you have non-local classes that are uncharged, then you can also construct a twist that satisfies both of the things at the same time. But the question here is what happens if you have a Noether current. If you have a Noether current, then you can construct your twist by exponentiating the charges that are produced by smearing of the Noether current in a region, let's say, a little time smearing also. Of course, this twist will be additive because you construct it with the local operator. But you can also prove that it's complete because, because the charge in the region plus the charge outside is the whole charge, and it transforms correctly in the global group everything, but the charge in the outside part commutes with the maximal algebra here. So in that sense, you can. If you have another current, you automatically have twists that are complete and additive, and means that the continuous symmetry has another current. There cannot be charged non-local classes. So this somehow allows to understand that there is an abstraction for the Noether theorem if you have non-local classes that are charged under the action of a continuous group. Because in that case, you cannot have another current. And in fact, it happens that all the known examples where there is no another current are of this form. For example, I have listed here some examples. The case of the free graviton, for example, doesn't have a stress tensor. And the non-local classes have Lorentz indices. And the Poincaré symmetry mixes the classes. Also, if you have, for example, two Maxwell fields, and you can rotate between the two Maxwell fields, this rotation will interchange the Wilson loops of the different Maxwell fields, and then will move classes. In this case, the symmetry mixes the Wilson loops, and there is no rotation symmetry between Noether current for this rotation symmetry for the two Maxwell fields. All these two examples come into the context of the Weinberg-Witten theorem. I will talk about a little more about that. There is also, for example, for the Maxwell field, there is the duality symmetry that interchanges the electric and magnetic field. And then it interchanges Wilson and Toff loops, electric and magnetic fluxes. And then again, there is no current for this symmetry. And you can think, for example, other examples, for example, Maxwell field in dimension different from 4, or take only the derivatives of a free scalar, free massless scalar in dimension greater than 2, And then these two theories have dilatation symmetry, but do not have dilatation current. And the fact is, and the reason is that the symmetry mixes the classes because, for example, for the Maxwell field in dimension different from 4, you will get Wilson and Toff loops that have dimensionful charges. So it mixes the class. And these cases are the known example for counterexamples for dilatation invariant implies conformal invariance. Somehow it's related to that also. But all these examples are free and massless. And one can ask why. And then we have the ABJ anomaly that also has a U1 symmetry. I will show that. And then this is an interactive case. So why most of the examples that usually bother people say, well, I don't have in these cases a current and why, and this ABJ is interacting and also have this problem. Well, this idea gives an interpretation of Wyman-Witten theorem, says that there is no nether current corresponding to charged particles with elicity, massless particle charged with elicity 1 or higher, and there is no stress tensor for a theory with a massless particle of elicity, I think is 3/2 there or greater. For example, what happens with the graviton? The graviton in 4 dimensions, you have the Riemann tensor is a gauge invariant operator. I mean, free massless graviton, and then you can produce out of the Riemann tensor several different conserved 2 forms, and with these 2 forms you can integrate over a surface and you can obtain non-local operators because they are conserved, but they are not produced by the derivative of a one form that is physical. There is not it's a gauge non-invariant object. So and you can compute the algebra, for example, in the case of 2 loops that are linked to each other, and the algebra gives you something like this. And as you see, the classes of these elements depend on some parameters that are numbers, but are vectors and tensors, so they have indices. So when you apply Poincaré symmetries, these classes will change, and then you see that you have a R20 group of generalized symmetries, and the classes have Lorentz indices that transform non-trivially, and as a linear representation, because it's linear transformation of the Poincaré conformal and duality symmetries of the thing, so there is no stress tensor, no dilatation current, no duality current. And you can also play the game of doing this in high dimensions and different. For free fields, it's very simple. When you have a spin, it's very simple to produce things like that. Well, this is our conjecture. This is what we want to prove. That is, but it seems a bit difficult because it needs quite a mathematics in. Is the idea that having found an abstraction for Noether's theorem, we want to prove that if the abstraction is taken out, you have the Noether current. So that is somehow the converse of the previous theorem, that if there are non-local classes that are non-invariant under the continuous global symmetry, then there is a Noether current. And the idea is somehow an heuristic idea to go to this would be to prove that there is twist, always there is twist as small as you want. But the problem is then you can go to the charge of the current operator, let's say in the ultraviolet. It has to be UV complete, the theory. But what happens for a theory that that it doesn't have another current, what happens is that this little twist that you divide the space in little twist, they do not concatenate to each other. So you have an additive twist And then the multiplication of this cannot give you the twist in the whole region. Otherwise, the charges will not be. The non-local classes will be uncharged. So the idea is to understand what happens for the, especially for the concatenability of twists for these different regions that are adjacent to each other. The importance of this idea is that first that it will give you the existence of currents, general existence of currents, except some control cases mostly are free, like the graviton, for example. It will also be very powerful to extend the Weimer-Witten theorem. The Weimer-Witten theorem tells you that there is a graviton particle, there is no stress tensor, but it doesn't tell you that there is no quantum field theory with the graviton. It only tells you that there is no stress tensor. So, but if you have the Noether theorem, then the strong form of the Noether theorem, then if you don't have a stress tensor, it means that there are classes charged and under Poincaré symmetry, and this implies there are the coupled graviton, essentially. The gravitons are free and the coupled from everything else. And as a more formal application would be the case that to understand how to, because people say, well, the quantum field theory I define it by quantum fields, Wiedemann fields, or I define it algebraically. So from quantum fields you can go to this, but from algebraic quantum field theory there is no real understanding how to say that in most cases you get quantum fields, and this will give you a way to produce the quantum fields through the Noether theorem. So let us think then on this idea, try to classify a little bit what are the possibilities of a continuous symmetry acting on non-local classes. In a general way, I will do it in a very restricted scenario, but still is the one that pertains to the ABJ anomaly. Let's say, The first observation is that as the symmetry is continuous and the classes are moved under the symmetry, it means that both the classes of some region and the complementary classes, both are continuous. So, and this is very powerful. This has a lot of power to restrict the possibilities, as I will show. For example, suppose that we have just an abelian An abelian class, we don't know what it is, an abelian class. So you have the class of the A's and the class of the B's that are complementary. This is abelian, so you have a sum for the charges, let's say, and the same here. This is the fusion of the operators, the non-local operators. And then immediately you have this law for the commutation relation between non-local operators that live in complementary regions. This is always this can be proved from the fact that the groups are abelian. And then you can think, well, what would do a group, a continuous group of symmetries acting on these classes? It has to change the labels pointwise, and then you can see that it has to respect the fusion rules and respect the commutation relations, and the only possibility that you get is this one. So lambda is a parameter of the group. And this implies that non-local classes are non-compact. These A's and B's are non-compact and continuous. So are R groups. An example is the dilatation symmetry for the free Maxwell field in dimension different from 4, because the charges are the Wilson loop charges are dimensionful, and they transform in this way. Then let us move to the case where the classes here and the classes here are two-dimensional. Let's say A1 and A2, B1 and B2 with an additive abelian group operation for the fusion. And again, the commutation relation is again given by this. And then the only possibilities are of this form. The A has to transform linearly with some matrix that depend on lambda, your group parameter, and this is the transformation of the complementary region. This M lambda has to be a one-dimensional group of matrices, in this case, 2x2 matrices. And then you can try to see what you can get, and you can get dilatations, and you can also get, for example, rotations. Just this matrix is a rotation, two-dimensional rotation. And for example, if you take the rotation, you will get that the non-local classes also have to be non-compact, have to be the plane also here. And the example is the other one that we have seen before, the two Maxwell fields that are rotated to each other. And here you can see what is happening and why the most of the models are that violate the Noether theorem are free and massless. And the reason is that you have non-compact dual classes. That means that both classes, let's say Wilson loop and Toff loops, let's say, are continuous. In that case, you can think in a different kind of Noether theorem that I'm not talking about, that these classes are produced by currents, let's say, by integration of fluxes. Fluxes. You have two fluxes because both of them are continuous. And when you have that, the commutation relation between these fluxes when they are linked, they are, is completely fixed. And it doesn't depend on the form of the loops. And from there, you can understand that the what is the possibility for the correlation function of these two field operators now. And the correlation functions is completely fixed. It's fixed by this formula, and this is a linking number, exactly linking number term, that is a topological thing that you cannot change. And you can see from here that this doesn't renormalize, it's always the same, and satisfies the massless free equation. So you know that there is a free massless particle because you have a delta function there. It's not absolutely immediate that you get a free theory because these fields are not the same. If it were the same, you already know that it's a free theory, but you have to work a little bit more to disentangle the free theory here from other possible contaminations. But you can prove that there is a free theory behind this. So this is the reason why most of the cases, because the symmetry is continuous, the dual classes have to be continuous. And if the dual classes that do not commute to each other are both continuous, you get this non-compact thing, and it's already free. So the question is that remains is in among these possibilities, there are some that allow the non-compact, the non-local classes to be compact. And you can see that there is only one possibility. That is this case. So the A and B is not compact now. the continuous part is compact. It's a U1. And here is the group Z, that is the dual of this U1, and the dual of this U1 is Z. So you need two-dimensional thing, but now one is compact and the other is discrete. And you can see that as the group is continuous, it cannot change the label A1 because if this is an integer, it remains the same. And the same here, it cannot change the label B2. But it can change the other label, the continuous one, by adding something proportional to the group parameter times the integer that appears in the first region. This is the only other possibility that that allows you for things that do not give non-compact models. And once you have that, you have already all the possibilities, all the things that were peculiar in the ABJ anomaly, you have already there. For example, because you have a continuous U1 symmetry here, this lambda is a continuous U1 symmetry, but it doesn't have Noether current because it mixes classes. You also have the Goldstone theorem, and this is because of an old paper that derives the goals of Zenon just by the existence of twists and not by the existence of currents. So you don't really need currents to derive the Goldstone theorem. You need twists. And the third thing is quantization of the group action. So it means that, for example, here, if you, this is an integer, this A1 is an integer, let's say it's 1, I can move lambda, that is the parameter of my group, from 0 to some value, that is the parameter where the group goes to the identity. And then if it goes to the identity, it means that, that this thing that you are adding here is just the trivial thing that you can add to this U1. So it's, there is a compatibility between the cycle of the group and the cycle of non-local operators. And this gives you a possibility that a quantization of the possibilities for your the size of the group parameter space. And the fourth thing is that suppose the non-local operators exist even at the infrared. Then it means that the symmetry has to exist at the infrared still, because there is something transforming in the symmetry, and the symmetry we know, we expect that the symmetries act wherever there is something that transforms, so it has to exist at the infrared. And as the non-local operator is transforming, it must be the case that there are also local excitations, local operators that are transforming, because non-local operators are formed by local ones. So it means that there must be massless particles that are charged under the group, and the rate of the group action on the non-local operator have to match, and this is the idea of anomaly matching. So let me, this was kind of abstract. Let me describe how it goes in the case of pion electrodynamics. So this is an infrared effective model, but the nice thing is that the anomaly is seen at the classical level here. So I take a pion plus electromagnetic field plus this term that mixes the two. If this term were absent, this current, the derivative of the pion would be conserved. But and with this term, I get an equation from the equation, classical equation of motion, an equation that is the anomaly equation. And then you can do the following. You can invent a new current that is this one. And the divergence of this thing is zero, because this object can be seen as the divergence of this. So it means that you now have a conserved current, but it's non-gauge invariant, no? It's non-gauge invariant, so it's not a real current of your theory. But with this non-gauge invariant current, you can produce a charge by integrating J0 over the whole space, and you get this thing that is also locally non-gauge invariant, but is globally gauge invariant, because as you integrate in the whole space, when you gauge transform this thing, you get a boundary term that doesn't change the action of the charge on the local operators. And then, well, then we have a kind of candidate for a symmetry generator, and then you have to see how it acts on the local operators. You can derive from the canonical commutation relations that are this one, that in these models automatically include Schwinger terms. For example, the electric fields do not commute to each other and have the pion, etc. And using this canonical commutation relation, you get that the charge leaves all local operators invariant, including the stress tensor, but it changes the pion in the usual way. It just moves the pions by a constant. So from here, you learn that the symmetry acts as an automorphism of the local algebras, so it's an internal symmetry. Normal way internal symmetry acts. And then you can ask what is special about this symmetry. it doesn't have another current, so you can search for non-invariant non-local classes. The magnetic flux is still conserved, so from here you can get Wilson loops. And you can also see that from the equation of motion, this other two-form field that involves the pion is also conserved. So it looks like what would be the tough loop. In fact, the fluxes do not commute. They have the usual commutation relation. And with this, you can produce non-local operators. And they have the usual commutation relation. And now if you see the action of the symmetry, what it does is to change the electric charge of the flux to the magnetic one. And it leaves the magnetic one invariant. And in terms of the non-local operators with the general charges, it does exactly the thing that we saw that was the only possibility that keeps the non-local sectors non-compact. So it acts as expected. And it's important to remark here that as the local operators are constructed locally, so we don't have any freedom of choice of the action of the symmetry on the non-local operator. It automatically comes from the transformation of the local operators. Well, the same story applies to massless QED. There you have the usual fermion coupled to electromagnetic field, the usual J-phi current, and the anomaly. And as Adler pointed out very far away in time, that you can produce another current that is conserved, but is non-gauge invariant. Again, you can produce a global charge that is well-defined on local operators, even I have doesn't have a local gauge invariant density. And then you have to work harder to compute the Schwinger terms to see the commutators. And you can see that this exactly matches what happened in pyro electrodynamics. And at the end, what you get is that the new charge commutes with electric and magnetic fields, but it doesn't commute with the chirally charged operators, gauge invariant operators. So it's again, it's an internal symmetry. But then you can ask how we see in this model the non-trivial transformation of the tough loops. And the way to see that is the Witten effect. The one that produces, that transforms is the tough loop that is a is an operator where you fix a boundary condition that is monopolic. It's like a monopole. And then if you produce a chiral rotation of the fermion, this induces a topological theta term in the action. So because of the Witten effect, it changes monopole to electric boundary conditions of the line operator, and then it will change your tough loop to a tough loop times some kind of Wilson loop, so it will add an electric charge to your operator. I wanted to describe now this same thing with a little more detail, but in a way that is somehow independent of the model, to see how these ideas somehow lead you to a kind of computation of the anomaly coefficient that does not involve Feynman diagrams, does not involve other things, but comes from this idea of compatibilities between the cycle of the group and the cycle of non-local operators. So the quantization of the anomaly comes from there. So let us start thinking that we do have something like this. So we have the anomaly, but we want to compute beta. What is the possibility for beta, for the coefficient? So in order to this beta to be well-defined, I have to define the normalization of my fields in both sides. Well, I take the charges the minimal charges of the electromagnetic field to be Q0. So the non-local Wilson loops will live between 0 and Q0. The non-local of the charges on the Thom loop are then completely defined as integer multiples of 2 pi over Q0 to satisfy the Dirac quantization condition. And then the current, I will normalize it to have a parameter that runs between 0 and 2 pi. It means that the charge of the smallest charge operator is 1. And now if we have that, we can transform with a parameter of the group that depends on x, and the usual ideas give you the transformation of the action in this way. And from this equation, we get that the action transform with FF dual times some function that depends on x. And then we are in the realm of the Witten effect. Witten effect says that if you have ordinary Maxwell action plus some term of this form, you get that monopoles get an electric charge in general. Because the equation of motion for the divergence of the electric field turns out to have a term now proportional to the magnetic field times the gradient of this thing. And then you can see that if you have here a Thom loop coming into the blackboard, and then I apply a twist operator, and a twist operator will have a lambda that changes between these two some specific parameter, let's say, is applying the symmetry to the Thom loop, then you can use this and compute that the magnetic boundary conditions transform, the magnetic monopole boundary conditions transform, and you get some electric charge, and the result is this one, where the 8, you can even eliminate the 8 if you define properly here with 1/4 in the Maxwell Lagrangian and 1/2 for the duality. So, but you get this. You get that the there is an electric charge now that changes by your symmetry parameter times the magnetic monopole. And now you take our quantization condition, that is to say that if you change by 2 pi the maximum possible value, the identity, you get to the identity with the group, this 2 pi, you plug here the monopole charge, then this has to be, again, something that is proportional to the identity for the electric charge, that is Q0. Identity is Q0, so it has to be n times Q0. And from there, you get the usual anomaly coefficient with an n that you have to find out where it comes from. If it is electrodynamics, for example, you get n equal to 1. So the minimal one you get for electrodynamics. And you can see, well, what happens if I, instead of putting a full electron, I put only a chiral electron, and then it will get 1/2 here, and doesn't make sense. But it doesn't make sense also in many ways. In particular, for example, in that case, the electric charge is proportional to the chiral charge because there is only one operator, and so the theory doesn't have, because you only take gauge invariant operator, doesn't have chiral local fields, so it cannot have transformation of anything under chirality, in particular non-local operator. So you see in many different ways that this, of course, in this case, you have an anomaly in the gauge theory. So let me just a final comment. What is the integer n in this understanding? Well, the integer n turns out to be the smallest charge for the non-local operators. You can produce charge operators just doing Fourier transforms for these dions that transform with the phase, and the smaller charge that you can get using combination of non-local operators is n. So this somehow tells you what is the meaning of n in this idea. And you can see that this symmetry, for example, for QCD is spontaneously broken, but in QED, in principle, it would be an unbroken symmetry. So let me give some final remarks. It's important in what I said for this anomalous action on the non-local classes of the U1 of the chiral symmetry that we are living in four dimensions, because we need both the electric and magnetic fluxes or non-local operators to live in the same region. That doesn't happen in other dimensions. And then one can try to understand what happens in other dimensions, perhaps this matching of a symmetry that transforms classes doesn't hold. Well, in two dimensions, what happens is the Schwinger model is that the chiral symmetry is explicitly broken now by instantons, so there is no chiral symmetry at all. It's not that it transforms classes, it doesn't exist, the chiral symmetry. In six dimensions, for example, you can play the game of drawing a Lagrangian like this, that is similar to the pion electrodynamics. You have the pion, you have the Maxwell field, and you have this coupling now. You need three Fs. And you can see that there is, again, a symmetry that acts locally just by displacing the pi zero by a constant. And again, this symmetry doesn't have another current. However, in this case, the TOF loops and the Wilson loops live in different topologies because we are in six dimensions. The Wilson loop, again, lives in a line, and the TOF loop lives in a higher dimensional surface. So it cannot be the case that they get mixed to each other. In fact, if you compute what happens with a symmetry transformation to the Wilson and TOF loops, they transform, but they transform locally with local operators. So the symmetry doesn't change classes. So what's happening here? Because we don't have another current, and the classes are invariant. So in that case, we conjecture that what happened here is that this theory cannot be UV complete, cannot be completed, because we have an effective model with a continuous symmetry and no nether current, and no non-invariant high Dirac violation classes. So it means that the theory would be complete, you would have the nether current, and the nether current will be seen in the infrared. So it must be the case that the theory cannot be completed. Well, and a final remark that there was in the recent years several papers in the HEP literature that claim that this type of symmetry action that mix generalized symmetries are non-invertible. And we are seeing this here as a U1 symmetry that is invertible. Perhaps these people talk in a different way, but it's not the usual way in we talk in quantum, in high energy physics of a symmetry. This is just a U1 symmetry in Minkowski space. It's a U1 for the local physics, at least. And this invertibility of the symmetry, this is a group, it's invertible, you multiply by the inverse. This invertibility is behind anomaly quantization. It also is the fact that global internal symmetry is invertible in general, completely general now, not in this model, but in general, is in accordance with the DHR theorem. The DHR theorem is a theorem made by algebraic people quite 30 years ago or more, that tells you that interpreting these ideas in this kind of phrasing, it tells you that all zero form symmetries come from a group. At the time, perhaps it was not as much as understood yet, but it was not much of the novelty because everybody knew that internal symmetries were groups, and then, well, they obtained mathematically the same thing, right? So it's okay, perfect. But if you now to try to enlarge your possibilities, people have been discussing these ideas of what can be a zero-form symmetry. It means that something that transform in a ball transform the operators. You can say, why cannot be some endomorphism that is not invertible? Why cannot be something that is not a group, some more complicated algebraic structure? Well, then you have to go back to this theorem, and if you see what it means, this theorem, in this interpretation, it means that they all come from a group, in fact.
It's semantics. You just changed, in the process of the discussion, you just changed what may be symmetry.
No, what I mean is that if you have, you could have, for example...
If people say a symmetry is a topological thing that changes the operators, it wraps around. And in that definition of symmetry, you cannot have non-invertible symmetries. If you want definition as something acts on the output of local operators, then in that definition you cannot have...
No, I don't think they are different. If you have a topological operator that transforms the operators inside something, it's an endomorphism, whatever is an endomorphism of the algebra, right? And then you can go from there to their theorem, and you can prove that these endomorphisms are produced by group. So it's important. It's important to.
It transforms things by wrapping around them, and it's not a group.
So,
In two dimensions. This is higher. Sorry, this is higher than two. Higher than two dimensions. See, of course, in two dimensions. No. This is in higher than two dimensions. No, I think you have to really understand this because it's important, yes, for your community. Also, I think it's important that to understand this work of these people because it has a lot of, like, at the time it was not thought as a let's say, classification theorem. But you can see in the modern language that this is a kind of classification theorem of all possible endomorphism that you can get in quantum field theory, in a region, let's say. That is local, of course. Not local, you can have anything, but that is local. Well, that's all.
Okay. Questions?
Yeah. It's not that I don't think I understood. So you said that you can have the AB anomaly, which is which doesn't lead to a conserved current, and still you have a constant boost, right? But I thought that, for example, the AB anomaly is mass the eta prime, right? You see this. It's really.
Yeah, but this case is similar to the case of a. It's exactly the same type of thing that where you have a. In the Schwinger model in two dimensions, that you have instantons, local instantons that break explicitly the symmetry. If you go to Toff paper, he say the symmetry is explicitly broken.
I mean, you don't. It's not a good understanding. I think of the prime mass because instantons doesn't. I mean, the Toff paper that is not really. I mean, the calculation of the Toff paper has a correct problem, so it's not really a question of instantons. The mass of
the theta dependence of the vacuum energy,
which is not, that's an important point.
Theta is fixed, right? Theta is fixed.
No, yeah, but what I mean is that
So if you are saying that it depends on the theta dependence of the vacuum thing, You are saying something local, so you are talking about the local physics. It's not nothing infrared. I think it's in any way the answer would be that there is no such a symmetry. There is no such a symmetry. The symmetry is broken. If you intend to produce these operators, they will be no topological. They will do not commute.
You meant that in QCD this symmetry is spontaneously broken, you refer to that, you are thinking about this case of the eta prime. At some point you mentioned that in QCD this symmetry is spontaneously broken.
No, but this is different. This is different, yes. In that case, it's spontaneously broken. There is a U1 symmetry that is spontaneously broken. Here it's explicitly broken. So it doesn't commute with the Hamiltonian. It doesn't commute with the stress tensor, let's say. So there is no such a symmetry. There is no endomorphism of the local operators. There is something that it doesn't commute with the time translations, for example.
Any other questions? Okay, thanks again.
Thank you.